This is an interview with Harriet Kaczynski on May 11th, 1984. We are talking in the Red Gym. My name is Laura Smale of the UW Archives Oral History Project, and this is on the occasion of your 50th reunion as a member of the class of 1934.
Yes.
I was just asking you what you have been doing, what your work has been since you were in.
Well,
just
my,
briefly.
Yes, my I was an art education major, and I did teach art in schools. My last place was DePauw University when World War II came along, and I joined the Red Cross and went overseas as a recreation worker. And I was over there in India, China, and Japan for 6 months. And then I did come back, and I stayed with the Red Cross until my retirement 10 years ago.
Oh, I see. You were, you were born in South Bend, Indiana. What did your family do?
Well, my family, my father was in the, he was a cigar manufacturer. And we were not very wealthy. As a matter of fact, I had to find a way of earning money to come to college. And it was very unusual for a woman to come to college, especially from my hometown.
Was your father, were your father or mother educated?
No, not through any more than high school. And my father came from the state of Wisconsin. And I just decided when I was in high school that I was going to come to college and nothing was going to interfere with it, and I wanted to be an art teacher.
Why did you want to go to college?
I just
What made you think that
Yes, I think that I admired my teachers and I admired people that had an education and they were accomplishing things in the community. And I thought I would like to do that kind of thing. Secretarial work, which most of the girls went into or they got married, did not appeal to me that much. I guess I was destined to be a career woman. And
did your mother encourage you?
My mother and father, yes, they never stood in my way. They always said that we could do as we wanted. And I remember when I was, when I finally chose the University of Wisconsin, I'll have to bring in a little personal experience here, but I think it's interesting. When I decided to come, because it was coeducational, and I wanted to come to a coeducational institution, it was also the university where my father was born. It also had a good art education department. So I decided to come here. But the pastor of my church was very unhappy with my family that they were allowing me to come to the University of Wisconsin, which was supposed to be a communist institution. And so my father said these words that I will never forget. If we have not raised her now to know the difference between good and bad, we've done a lousy job. And so I always remembered that, and I came to the University of Wisconsin, and it was, I had been here only about a month when I found out when you went to church, you had to be there 15 minutes ahead of time or you couldn't get a seat over here at the Newman, or the St. Paul's Church. Also, it was not very long after that that I discovered the marvelous Helen White, who was a professor. And she became a very good friend of mine through the YWCA. And she continued to be a friend of mine until she died. And I have much correspondence from her and own her four books. So this was wonderful. I was most anxious to write back to my family and to our parish priest that this school was a great school and that there were a few communists maybe sitting on the library steps talking to a few people, but we had freedom of speech here. And that, I thought, was great. And you could listen to the bad, or you could listen to the good. And so I had a great experience here. But during the time I was here, we did bump into the Depression. We felt it coming on, and when the stocks crashed and the banks closed, nobody had any money, which was a terrifying thing. Yet we went to school. We were given credit. The bills didn't have to be paid right away. Everybody was very kind about that. But yet we didn't quite know where this money was going to come from. And finally, there were arrangements through the family banks and so forth where there was some restitution made, and I was able to continue school. But I remember in my junior year, I had to find work, and I waited on table in the dormitories, Chadbourne Hall and Barnard Hall. And so I made my, at least I got part of my board. It was hard work to continue, but I did. I remember going to a friend in South Bend, Indiana, and I asked him, he was a banker, and I had been friends with them through a theater group, and I asked him if he could loan me $500. And he told me, "I'm a good friend of yours, but I can't loan you any money because you don't have any collateral." So finally, my family found a way to borrow $500, and they gave that to me as a gift, and I was able to finish the last year of my school. Now, can you imagine on $500? Mm. But I did. Then when we graduated, it was difficult to find a job, women especially. And of course, there were also rules that if you were married, if a girl was married, she could not get a job in the same institution or in education. And so it was very difficult for women. And when we did get into a job, we did not get the money. And this really continued on for quite a while during my life. But I still felt that the women that went to school here, and somebody just asked me a question in the drugstore the other day, were there many men, women in your class? And I said, yes, there were quite a few. Of course, we did not have as many as men, but there were fewer women, but there were a lot of good-thinking women that came here. Many of them were married, and many of them went into careers. But all it was a struggle for all of them to find jobs, even for men. As you know, I've been editor of this little newsletter for the class of 1934 for the last 4 years. And in order to get information, we went to the class members with a questionnaire that asked them pretty general questions about their education, what their accomplishments were, what their satisfactions were, and all that sort of thing. And you know, all through these questionnaires, most of the people said, you know, it was the Depression, and I took any job I could take. And many people, according to these questionnaires, did not follow their majors. Mm-hmm. I myself did not get a job until 6 months after I graduated. And then that was teaching art in a junior high school in my hometown. Hmm. And so I started off on my teaching career that way. But it was very difficult for women to get into the professional fields. I remember three women in our class. They were the only women who were accountants. And none of them procured jobs upon graduation as accountants. Mm. They took jobs as secretaries. And many girls that trained in education to teach did not get jobs in teaching, but took secretarial work or some kind of work, perhaps in the family industry or business, just to be doing some work. So it was a time that was not only hard for men to find jobs, but also much more difficult for women. And of course, to me, it was great to know women like Professor Helen White, to know Abby Marlatt.
Oh, you knew her too?
Yes, Hazel Manning, who was in the home economics department, Julia Randolph, who was in the related arts of the home economics department, and Blanche Trilling, and the lady, can't think of her name now, but she was head of the dance department. Margaret Dobler.
Yes.
And she was a marvelous person. During my college years, even though it was difficult financially, these women then played an important role in my life in inspiring me and motivating me to continue. And I don't know why, if that's why I never got married or not, but I continued a career with the in teaching, and then with the Red Cross. And I worked with people most of my life until I retired 10 years ago. And now I'm busier than I ever was. I happen to be a volunteer state commander of the state of Ohio for the China-Burma-India Veterans Association. And this is really a turnabout, because this organization is a man's organization, really. And for them to elect a woman is different. That never would have happened in 1934. I also became president of an American Society for Training and Development. Perhaps you've heard of that organization. They had their headquarters here at the University of Wisconsin, here at Madison. And I've attended some institutes. And I was the president of that group locally in Dayton, Ohio. And again, most of those top training jobs went to the men. Now, even as late as a few years ago, I hope things are changing. And I hope that we that graduated during those depression years and knew the hardships that women faced in doing a career have had some kind of influence on what is going to happen in the future.
Tell me how you got to know Helen White.
I got to know Helen White through the YWCA. I guess I was a kind of a rebel. You know, I belonged at that early age to the YWCA in South Bend, Indiana. I had worked 2 years before I came to college, so that's why I'm a little bit older than the class members. And the woman who was the executive director of the YWCA took a great interest in me because of my ambition to go to school. And she helped me all she could, not financially, but in guiding me toward choosing a college and what to do and how to act, and I learned the secretarial work and all that sort of thing. That did help me a great deal. And Helen White was very prominent with the student YWCA board here. And so, yes, and she was our advisor. And and so I became interested in going to work with YWCA here. And then in my senior year, I became a member of the regional YWCA council. I went to New York during Christmas vacation to a meeting there, and also was on the cabinet of the YWCA here on the student campus. And Helen White was one of our guides and mentors during that whole period. I also knew her through the St. Paul's Church, where she received Holy Communion every single day of her life. She was a most holy and saintly woman. And she was very friendly and very, very kind. She spent a great deal of outside time beyond her teaching hours with students and counseling them and helping them, and especially during those depression years. That's how I became close to her, and we continued that friendship all through the years until she died.
You could go and talk to her, you mean?
Oh, yes.
In her office?
Yes, anytime. And if you sent her a note or a Christmas card, and I'm sure she received many, you received an answer. And a nice note. I have a letter from her that she wrote on the ship when she was going to England, and I know the stationery was the Cunard line. And she was a great woman. I met her later after I was working. I met her in South Bend, Indiana, where she had come to address the American Association of University Women. She was, at that time, the national president of the American Association of University Women. And we sat down, there was all that hubbub and everything, but she sat down with me and we had a nice chat for about 15 minutes, you know. She was a great woman.
Was she befriending mostly women students, and did you feel that she was conscious of that they would have greater difficulty in getting careers and that she wanted to help them?
Yes, I do think. She was very kind to men, too, but she was especially interested in guiding women toward a good career and a decent kind of life, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why she was very interested in the YWCA, because that was an organization that promoted freedom of thought and better circumstances for women.
Mm-hmm. Now, you lived in a dormitory, did you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You could afford that.
Yes, uh-huh, I did. I lived at Chadbourne Hall for 3 years, and I even joined a sorority. I joined Delta Zeta, but I worked. I also felt that I'd like to join a group like that. Mm. I knew some girls in that group that were most helpful to me and very kind to me, and so my last year in college, I did join that group and have had some marvelous associations since then. Mm. And even tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to meet with some of the Delta Zetas at the Lida McIver's home. Mm. And we're going to have a little gathering of some of the Delta Zetas. Later on, it did help me because I was asked to come back to the University of Wisconsin as an instructor for one of the women who went on a sabbatical. That meant I could get my master's degree, and my sorority asked me to live at the house and be an advisor to the girls, and I got my board and room free, you see. Mm-hmm. So that did help. But I worked the whole time, worked 2 years before I went to school, worked all the time that I was in school, in the summers and so forth, so that I could help supplement some of the money my mother and father gave and borrowed so that I could go to school.
So you weren't in a state of desperate poverty?
No.
You didn't have to think about whether you'd spend a nickel for a Coke?
No, it was not that bad, although I did have to think maybe about buying a dress.
You did.
And I made all of my clothes.
Oh, you did?
So when I was a student, I made all of my clothes. I still do. And that helped me considerably, you know, because the cost of clothing was very, very high, and always was. And so I could have nice looking clothes because I did my own sewing, you see.
Did you have much social life other than the YWCA? Did you go out on dates?
Yes, I went out on dates, and I experienced some of the closeness to the life in Prohibition times when, you know, everybody would sneak out and perhaps do what they weren't supposed to do. I don't think young people are any different today doing what they did in those days. And we went to dances, and I remember well the tea dances at the Memorial Union, and we'd go there and dance with all these many men and finally, you know, become good dancers because we really practiced a lot. And that helped me a great deal when I was with the Red Cross. Because when you were asked to go to a club, there would be 200 boys who would want to dance with about 10 women, you know, at the place, and they all danced differently, and so that did help a great deal to socialize with them.
Oh, I see. You mean during the war?
Yes, during the war, right. Uh-huh.
Were you conscious of other students being worse off than you were?
Yes. Oh, indeed. And there were many of my friends that had to quit school and never came back, never did finish their education. There are people in my class that had to quit and then came back, so they are not actually members of the class of 34. They graduated in 35 or 38. Some of them went to work and came back later than that to finish the work, but many of them didn't. There were some fellas that went into their father's business and stayed with that, or went into a factory or something and started from the bottom and just worked up, you know. Yes, there were many people that did that, and there were lots of, I knew lots of students, especially men, that had three jobs maybe. They would wash dishes and take care of the kitchen duties at a sorority house, maybe. Maybe they would work in some office in on the hill and maybe do another job. And I often wondered how in the world they could do three jobs and also do their studying. But many of them did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there were many people. And I admire them greatly.
And was the dormitory, life in the dormitory at all affected? Was your food different? Was there less meat, anything like that? Are you aware of?
No, I'm not aware of anything like that. You know how students are about dormitory food. They just complain about it just for the sake of complaining, and they don't think it's very glamorous. We did have plenty to eat. I never did notice any shortages. I think there was some way that the university took care of the needs of the students.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have been in a situation in the laboratories, for instance, where equipment would have been, the amount of equipment would have been affected by lack of money. Anything like that?
No, I never felt that. Of course, we didn't have the kinds of equipment that you have now. You know, when I look at this equipment in the gym here that you showed me, it's marvelous. And yesterday when I was in the Elvium Museum, there was nothing like that on the campus when we were here. We had very, you know, simple equipment in art. We were down here at this little old wooden building that I think the Helen White Library is probably over now, the little wooden building where we had our art classes. Very simple kind of equipment, but of course we had to buy our own supplies, the prices of things did not seem to get higher like they have recently, where even though we've had a recession and inflation, prices have skyrocketed. They didn't seem to do that then. There was a gradual rise, you know, through the years. But we were very careful with our paper and our notebooks and our books. People sold their books, too. They tried to take care of them and to sell them so that you could buy your new books. Yes, that was very noticeable to do. Be frugal.
Were you somebody who was interested in concerts, the library? Did you
yes.
take advantage of
Oh, that? Yes. Yes, I remember going out to Camp Randall to hear Fritz Kreisler, and I tried. Of course, the tickets were $10, I think, or less than that maybe, for a whole season of all the concerts and all of the activities, all of the football games, everything. I don't know whether they have that system now or not, but we had a regular ticket book that you bought, and it entitled the student to go to everything. And
you could go to concerts on that.
Yes, and I found, this ticket book at home, and I know a lot of tickets were not used, and I wonder, but you just had to pull a ticket to go to this, and perhaps I wasn't interested in some athletic event, and therefore did not use all of those tickets. But I was extremely interested in orchestras, the dance programs. I was very interested in classical music. I don't know where I received this desire, except I maybe could go back to my elementary school education, when we had music appreciation in the schools, and the teacher once a week would bring in records and play them of Beethoven, Chrysler, the operas, and then we'd have to memorize those tunes and the composers, and then they'd come back, and then we'd take tests on what we could remember. I kind of attribute it to that kind of a tight little experience that made me love classical music, and I still do today.
Did you happen to hear Gertrude Stein when she came? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Because that was rather controversial, I think.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. And a lot of people did not like her, and I didn't understand her, to tell you the truth.
I'm not surprised. But you went.
Yes, oh yes. Mm-hmm. Huh. Because I think I have a little bit of this rebel in me, that I still will go to the controversial, and I will listen to it, and I'll pick what's good from it, and go along with it. I just want to say, that is no good. I like contemporary art. I love contemporary music. I think you have to be an artist or someone who recognizes design to know what is good in the contemporary art and contemporary music, because there's an awful lot of trash there, too.
I think I better...
Well, let's see how, this one's behaving properly. When one reads about the University of Wisconsin or college life in the 1930s, it is very striking how very much political activity was going on. The peace movement was very strong. There were what amounted apparently to riots on various campuses protest movements of a kind. How much were you aware of this? What did you think of it? Did you participate in it?
Yes, we were aware of it. And of course, we did have the experimental college on the campus at the time I was in school. And during that particular time, there was a great deal of criticism of this school. People thought that the students were communistic and they were kooks, and there were many of these men, young men, that were extreme in their thinking. On the other hand, I remember sitting in front at the induction ceremony this afternoon, sitting in front of Bill Blazer. Bill Blazer is an educational consultant in a college in the Midwest, a very keen mind. Now when I think back, Dr. Micheljohn was an outstanding leader in the area of thinking and philosophy. I think of all times, really. Well, we were most fortunate to have him at the University of Wisconsin, but I don't believe that we all appreciated him as much at the time. The students, of course, could go to school and they studied the humanities and so forth, and they didn't take any tests. They could go at their own pace, and then at a certain period of time, they took these oral and written exams covering a whole area of knowledge.
Now, how did you know this? Did you know some of them?
Yes, yes.
You did?
Yes, and dated some of the men.
You did?
Yes, oh yes, uh-huh, uh-huh. And some of the men were, they were just like any other student.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were a little far out and wore, well, they were hair differently, or they didn't seem to be as clean as the other fellows, you know, how they would mm-hmm. criticize them. At the time, I don't really think we realized what the goals and aims were of that experimental college, not until later. And then we saw what these men were doing. They almost all went into high positions because Dr. Micklejohn constantly was training them to think, to think, to think, to make decisions, not to let anybody run over you. Why do you want to do this? Why did you do that? Why do you want to go there? And it was almost a grilling kind of thing that those men went through.
Now, did they tell you this when you dated them? Did they talk to you
about
it?
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh, yes. Or the classes they didn't go to, they could do anything they wanted to do. A lot of them spent their time in the library reading books and reading books in other languages. And all that sort of thing.
Of course, uh-huh. That was just for them. That was just for the first 2 years. Right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm,
Did you get to know them when you were a freshman and sophomore, or
yes,
later on?
Yes, no.
Oh, but you would have known probably the ones who had been in it, but
yes.
were out by now.
No, I knew ones that were in the school at the time, yes.
Were they enjoying it? Did they talk about it with excitement, and were they, did you envy them for being in the school?
I don't think they talked about it so that they would excite others or make you really want to come into it. I think they thought they had the best deal.
I see.
You know, and that they were a little bit perhaps better than some of the other the run of students because they had to have a rather high IQ to get into the program. You see.
Incidentally, how were your grades?
Well, my grades were just below A. I missed mortarboard by just a few points.
Oh, were you disappointed?
I was a little disappointed because I wanted to make mortarboard, but then it was a high B plus average, mm-hmm. A minus average, and I felt well that was very good and way up higher than a lot of other students. So after it was all over, it didn't make much difference.
Was it that you were that there were some things that you were getting C's in that dragged you down?
Yes, I think there were some courses that I was not interested in that were requirements. I had a difficult time with French, I remember. And a couple of political science courses. They were so technical.
Who did you have in French?
Oh, I can't remember now.
Oh, okay.
Can't remember now. And then I think the other thing is that I was involved in outside activities.
What?
And, I was particularly interested in the YWCA, in the very beginning. And then I was on the Panhellenic Council. I was helped with the WSGA, and I also, Women's Self-Government.
Oh, I see.
And then in the sorority, I held a leadership position. And I was a regional officer, of course, in the YWCA.
Mm-hmm.
And these things did take time. Sometimes I really should have been studying more. And yet, these extracurricular activities gave me the kind of background that helped me in the kind of career led. Because it taught me how to work with people. And people now, when they meet me, say, oh, you know, there's Harriet. She was always friendly to everybody. Or she would, get in there and organize something. And they still, my classmates still see me as that way today.
So you were a pretty self-confident person when you went to college.
Yes. Yes, I was. I think I was perhaps a little more so because of my 2 years of working experience. Mm-hmm. Also, I think the training that my mother gave us, we were taught from the very beginning to learn household chores, how to cook, how to bake, how to respect other people, and that sort of thing. So, but then I think the 2 years that I was in work at the YWCA, and also working in a little theater group in South Bend, Indiana, that really gave me this confidence that maybe other students didn't have, and their families were much more protective of them.
Mm-hmm. I was glad you brought up the experimental college. It was in response to my question about your political views. So would you continue with that? Apparently, they were liberals, and you knew that. Did this affect your own attitude?
Yes, it did. You know, when I came to the university, I felt that I was a dyed-in-the-rag Republican in those days. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, I started, of course, I took some of the poli-sci courses. I took a Max Otto's course in Man and Nature, and we had opportunities to listen to great speakers in our day. And my views changed. My father, although he wasn't educated, was a very well-read man. He read a great deal. And my father, up until the time he died, would have great discussions about the government. And my father was a Democrat, And I was a Republican. I don't know why. When I was in school, I guess all my friends were Republicans, so I thought that's what I should be, and that's the way I was. So I believed in Coolidge and Harding and so forth, and I was for prohibition. I thought drinking was just terrible, you know. And so the university kind of upset all of these things, and I didn't go to the other brink, but I learned moderation. And by the time I graduated, I had changed my viewpoint. I would say, I'm not a Republican and I'm not a Democrat, but I'm going to vote for the best man the first time I can vote. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me that the first opportunity that I had to vote was for Roosevelt, or at the time that Roosevelt ran. I can't even remember now who ran against him, because he was in office.
Al
Smith, I think, yes. And my father and my mother were so surprised that my viewpoint was changed. And I never have changed to this day. I have always leaned toward the liberal or helping the people that are less fortunate than those of us that have had an education and that have had a career or some kind of balanced living support. So, and I'm that way today. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, she's way off there, you know. And I'll get into many arguments or discussions with people about that, especially, for instance, in the Catholic Church. I may be way over at one side. I think, well, I think that Catholic priests ought to be able to marry. I think the nuns or the women, if they want to be priests, ought to be priests. You know, it's a different world we're living in from 1901 AD. Mm-hmm. So I think the university had a very great influence on me. The teachers, other students, leaders here in carving out my life.
Were your sorority sisters liberals?
Not entirely. Some were, and some weren't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Oxford Peace Movement and the the great excitement about world peace at that time. That was one of the major political events in the mid-30s.
Yes.
Were you aware of it?
I was aware of it. I didn't participate in it. I maybe because I never had the opportunity. Although, in 1934, or 33, the fall of 1933, Bud Holt and I were co-chairmen of the University Convocation Series. I don't even know whether they have such a thing anymore.
I don't either.
You don't either. Well, it was a program that the university helped to sponsor, and students worked with a faculty group, and the university, I believe, paid for these lectures. There was a certain amount of money that was endowed to this fund. Mm-hmm. And we were both the co-chairmen of these series, and they were held on Sunday evenings in Old Music Hall, and we had four lectures on some kind of big world event or thinking or issue. And Glenn Frank, who was our president then, or the president of the university, was usually the first speaker and set the keynote according to what our theme was at the time. Now, I can't remember what our theme was, but it had something to do with peace or striving to create a greater calm in the world, because it was a very upsetting time. But one of the speakers that we had, and I brought his book and some news clippings with me, one of the speakers was William Peck, who was an Episcopalian priest, and he was here from England. And he came to Chicago for some kind of a conference, and we found out about him, and we were allowed to ask him to come to the University of Wisconsin for one of these convocation series. Mm-hmm. And he did, and he made a marvelous talk, but it was all along this line on peace in the world. And he devoted most of his work toward trying to relieve the plight of the miners in England. That was his life vocation. So I did have a little bit of a taste of it, you mm-hmm. see, because he was connected with the Oxford movement. Mm-hmm. So it was very exciting and very healthy, but I never did actually get involved in it, except to that extent.
And were you aware of national events, the programs that were being developed to help get out of the Depression?
Oh, yes.
Did you read the newspapers?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And we'd have to read the newspapers for some of our classes. Yes, yes, yeah. We were very aware of that. And also, in the dormitories and in the sororities, we sponsored a lot of programs that were organized to help elevate the thinking of a person. Mm-hmm. So that maybe once a week in our sorority, I remember, we would have a get-together, and it was a part of our education beyond what the university was giving. And we'd invite a speaker in and ask questions, and this was done extensively.
Hmm.
Uh-huh. It done in the churches, and done in your dormitories and in the sororities and in the fraternities too. You mean you don't hear the good side of some of the things that happened then in sororities and fraternities, but there were some good things.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, one woman I'd interviewed, she was the class of 38, said she felt that the students of course she was around the university in the 1960s, and she was comparing mm-hmm. the two, were much more mature and more serious because of the Depression. I don't know whether you have any basis for judging that. It's probably not a question to ask you.
Well, I do think that perhaps there were a lot of people that were wealthy that came to the University of Wisconsin. It also was a school where especially the people from the state of Wisconsin could go to school for a very nominal cost. I think the tuition was $21 mm-hmm. for a semester for an in-state student. And board and room was like $50 a month. So you see, it was not a high cost, I think, in proportion to salaries and so forth, as things have jumped to this day. I'm aware that there were a lot of people in school that were working very hard to get through. I know that I worked. I would say that I did have some help, but I also worked, mm-hmm. and I managed to get what I wanted, and enjoyed it. But it was not like some of the girls, you know, that could spend $100 in a week, you know.
There were.
And there were some men that were very wealthy too. Very few automobiles. Mm-hmm. I can remember one student, Fred Maytag of the Maytag Washer mm-hmm. Company, that had this automobile and go up and down. But we didn't have automobiles. Students did not have them in those days. We walked all the way from the end of Langdon Street way up to the Bascom Hall, the agricultural campus, and then back and then down. But I think we were very aware of the fact that there were a lot of students here that were working very hard to just make enough money to stay in school so they could graduate. Mm-hmm. And then it was rough to get the job. One of the most satisfying experiences that I had when I was in college was to be elected to the YWCA Regional Council. And when I served on this council, I was sent to Lake Geneva, where we had a kind of a fellowship session there, where we met with other YWCA and other leaders, and in a concentrated working together experience, lifting ourselves up a little bit higher and asking the help of God to do this to us, to help us, that we were not individuals in this world alone. We couldn't do it ourselves, and that we were dependent on our fellow men around us and God. And then I went on to New York City when I was a senior with this group, we stayed there, and I think one of the most marvelous experiences that I had was with a woman. When we went there, we went to some YWCA top official meetings of student YWCAs, and we learned a lot about the women's movement and how women were moving ahead. But of that experience, I remember this same thing that happened, but it's very specific, and that there was a black woman, one in this group, who had written a book. I don't remember the name of the book, but her name was Jessica Derricote. And it was a very beautiful book. She was a very learned woman with a fine education, and we all just loved her. And we then went out to eat, and we were turned down, I remember, one noon by 10 restaurants because we had a black woman with us. And finally, it was about 2:30, and this one restaurant let us in because it was near the end of the time of serving, and they said, well, they didn't have anything against her, they would lose customers if they saw a black woman there. And I always felt very proud that I was a member of this association and that we stood our ground for human rights, mm-hmm. you know. Yes. I think that was one of the most exciting things that happened and one of the moments that I was very proud of in my university mm-hmm. experience. And I credit that to the YWCA and also to the university for helping me to grow.
Yes, that's just...
Is that what you mean?
That's just the sort of thing I had in mind. Uh-huh. I mean, uh-huh. I didn't have that in mind, but that's a very good point to make.
Uh-huh.
Anything else?
I don't know, but this has been just a very interesting talking to you. And I am terribly excited. I get terribly excited about the University of Wisconsin. I'm very proud of the university. I'm very proud of what the university has contributed to our country. In other words, our Wilbur Cohen and Professor Witte going to Washington at the end of the Depression and helping to form the Social Security Administration. We just heard Wilbur Cohen talk. And he was a member of our class.
Yeah.
And there were so many great things. I remember reading through all these little questionnaires that the students sent me, my fellow members, saying, especially doctors, how thankful they were for the kind of education they received here for their career. I would say that 75% of the questionnaires that were returned to me, and this isn't just to, you know, to be, you know, do a Pollyanna speech about mm-hmm. Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but these people mm-hmm. said that one of their greatest satisfactions in their life was attending the University of Wisconsin and receiving the great education that helped them, and most of them said, to think and to get along with other people.
Hmm.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yes.
Uh-huh.
Interesting that so many would pick that up.
Yes, a lot of them did. And we have, now of course I can't say for the total number in our class, but I would say that 80% of the people that answered my questionnaires talked about their happy home life, their children, and their wonderful wives and their careers, and in a way connected it with their education at the University of Wisconsin. There were, I could only count about 7 or 8 that admitted they were divorced, which I think is great.
Yes.
Now, there were a lot of other people that I did not hear from. Maybe that's why not. But for the most part, it seems to be an era where we did have pretty high morals and respected the other human being. And I think a lot of the issues in our country, some of our legislation, has been taken care of because of that kind of thinking.
We're nearly the end of the tape. I'm curious as to how the university looks to you now.
Oh, I'm very proud of the progress that the university has made. They have had to add a lot of buildings, and I see all this marvelous electronic equipment and computerization and everything. But I do kind of miss the beautiful scenery that we had here. We still have it. You know, when I was out there looking at Lake Mendota, it's still very beautiful. Mm-hmm. But there are just too many buildings jammed together. And I think that is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about, you know, going up up the hill to Bascom Hall, and you see all these buildings, these modern ones, sticking up out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And there just seems to... there just hardly seems to be any air to breathe between them. And I kind of would like for some space, you know. And that's, of course, the artist in me, I think.
Yes.
I like space.
And how about the students?
I think they've been very friendly. They've asked us a lot of questions, and can't imagine when we go to eat. And they'll say, 50? When was that you made a week? It was that in... Oh, 40, no, it was in 34. 34, they would say, you know. And one of the students this morning in the Rennebaum's drugstore, or Walgreens drugstore, said, were there many women in the college then? And I see they're aware of women's problems even you know. And I said,
especially
yes,
now.
Yes, there were quite a few women. Mm-hmm. It was surprising. But we did have a tough Hoda mm-hmm. hall.
Mm-hmm. Have you become has the women's movement affected you?
Not at all, no. Mm-hmm. No, I believe in, I do not believe in equal rights. I don't believe a woman was created equal to man physically. I do believe, however, that a woman should have, that a woman and men have different roles to play in the continuity of life, and we should respect that. But I also believe that women and men should be treated equally in professions and education and the opportunities to grow. I do believe that, yes. But otherwise, I think it's kind of nice to let a man open the door for you. It's nice to know that, you know, a woman can love a baby. I think that there are some characteristics that women have that are beautiful and soft, and they could be ruined. And I think a man wants to be a master, kind of. But I do feel that you can have the equality in there where it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, we must be just about at the end now, so thank you
very much.
Oh,
wasted all that time.
Precious
on your time.